Now, as we get ready for the new year, a lot of people's attentions turn to making changes. Now, if you're living with sight loss, you might be grappling with confidence and speaking confidently. Now, how can we make the best of speaking opportunities? Well, if you're not confident in this area, it is something that you can work on to get you to a point where you are confident talking on a one-to-one basis or even talking to a group. We're joined now by Richard Newman, who is the author of a new book, You Were Born to Speak, and he's going to offer us some free advice on what we can do to become more confident as speakers.
Hi there, Simon. Yeah, great to speak to you. And I always think it's important to share it with people as I start to speak about this book. That confidence issue, I think, is the heart of it, no matter where I go around the world. And it's part of the reason I called the book You Were Born to Speak, is simply because I see so many people, they'll tell me, I'm naturally a quiet person, I'm naturally very shy, I'm not very good at communication, and that's just the way I've always been. And when they say that to me, I'll say to them, look, this is really nonsense. If you think about the moment that you were born, when you came out, you didn't quietly whisper, I don't know if anyone can hear me, but I'd really like some milk. Instead of that, you made this extraordinary sound, which ripped through the walls of the building that you're in, compelling everybody around you to come towards you to give you whatever you needed. And that's when you're just sort of 8 or 9 pounds in size. So when you're 20 times bigger than that, you've still got this extraordinary voice, this ability to connect with other people. But what happens during the course of our lives is that habits, anxiety, lack of confidence can get in the way and limits your ability as a speaker to connect with those around you. And it's certainly something that I went through. I went through a long phase of being painfully shy from being a small child all the way up to when I was about 17 or 18, when I decided I really had to get to grips with this and figure out my way past my sort of introverted, shy way. And so to do this, I threw myself right in the deep end. I went off to India and I was living in the foothills of the Himalayas in a small Tibetan monastery with about 20 monks there. And I was there to help them teach English. I thought this would be a great opportunity, speak to lots of people every day. And when I got there, I realized they didn't speak any English at all. They spoke Tibetan, Nepali and Hindi, but no English. And so I had to think, well, how am I going to connect with these people? And so I very quickly realized that through my body language and tone of voice, actually, we could really understand each other. And so by the end of 6 months, I managed to teach them all how to speak English. I learned how to speak Nepali. And then I came back to the UK. I went through years of acting training to sort of get past my sense of nervousness of speaking to people, and then worked with clients where I would speak to large groups every day to get to the point where I thought, okay, now I'm in a place where I've understood what is it I need to do with my mindset, with my confidence to get myself to a place where I can engage people with my voice, I can engage them with my ideas. And I realized that so many other people struggle with this, that I wanted to put down everything I'd learned, my story, the techniques we've come across in a book so that I can share those thoughts with other people.
Well, that's interesting that, Richard, because a lot of our audience are living with sight loss and there are various different stages of it. But one common thing that can affect those of us living with sight loss is we can lose our confidence, and especially when it comes to communicating and speaking out. And I thought it was a great opportunity to get your expertise on this, because a lot of your principles, whether it's business, looking for a job, or it might be just, you know, a coffee morning, the principles are the same, aren't they?
Yes, absolutely. And, I've coached people who are blind as well through this, where I think you're right that sense of sort of lack of confidence can make it very difficult. It really limits our ability to just use our voice to express our ideas. And what tends to happen is that people who have brilliant, really engaging, important, thoughtful, meaningful ideas don't speak up about them. And other people who have sort of louder, stronger, more confident voices will dominate the room. And that's not necessarily a good thing. So I'm keen that everybody gets that opportunity to really share their voice, shine their light. And as I put in my book, I want us all together to tilt the world in a more positive direction by hearing from great people who just held back through a sense of confidence. So to look at, you know, why that might be and how to overcome it. Essentially, if you think about any event that's coming up, maybe it's a meeting, an important conversation, something along those lines, where you really want to express your ideas, but you're feeling anxious about it. then essentially that anxiety is coming from a belief that you have in a negative version of the future. And so in your mind, you have this sense that as you get closer and closer towards it, that it's going to go badly, or people will reject your ideas. If you speak up, then you'll be ignored, or people will disagree with you. And so you're really just imagining a negative version of the future. So what I get people to do is to flip it. And as much as you possibly can is to imagine 30 minutes after that meeting has happened and everything has gone well, just to get a place in your mind where you believe that that future is possible. And then you can track back to the event itself and imagine as much as you can about that event. Who's going to be in the room? Whose voices are you going to hear? What is it that you want to say? And imagine saying what you want to say, the way that you want to say it, and getting the reactions that you want. And by doing that, it places something in your head, which is called future history. And this is something that was talked about originally by Muhammad Ali. He was the one who coined the phrase, where before all of his fights, he would visualize exactly what he wanted to achieve. He would believe it intensely that the round in which he was going to win the fight and which punch was going to win it for him, to the point where bookmakers were saying, look, please stop announcing this because we can't get any bets placed on your fights because people know what's going to happen. And you see many athletes doing that today. Many of them speak about it from various different sports, going to the Olympics or playing the Rugby World Cup, Wimbledon. They talk about this sense of creating in their mind, in their imagination, an absolute belief in success. And that therefore compels them towards it and gives them the confidence that they need to succeed.
Now, our time is limited today, sadly. We could talk about this all day. But I know that there's some bad habits that we want to avoid, don't we? Let's talk about style.
Sure. So in people's styles, one thing that, you know, particularly around voice that tends to happen is if people feel that someone has disagreed with them a lot, they feel rejected, they feel like they're not really heard. Or even if you're, you know, if you're working in an open plan office, so there's a lot of noise around, there's lots of phones going, there's lots of people. We tend to find that people limit their voice and they start to speak from the back of their mouth with their jaw, feel it fairly closed. And you can hear it's quite a muted sort of sound. And then I'll get people coming to a course or a workshop or a coaching session with me saying, you know, this is just the way that I naturally sound. And it's not at all. It's just tension that's come up around your voice or somewhere, anywhere in the vocal channel from where your voice starts to finish. And all we have to do is free up those elements, allow your jaw to move comfortably, allow your breathing to go comfortably as well, to power the voice, to power your sound, and to settle your state of mind, which then allows you to do what we would naturally do, which is a storytelling voice. You know, for 100,000 years, we have sat around campfires telling each other stories about saber-toothed tigers to keep us alive. And it's that storytelling sound that we thoroughly engage with. And story is what engages our mind with different types of information. So that's what I encourage people to get back to, is that that sense that they have, you know, when you maybe you're, if you're reading a story to a child or telling a story to a young child at bedtime, it's the fact that it's a story and that it's told with that storytelling voice that thoroughly engages them. And so that's what we've placed in this book. And it's important to mention, too, with the book, that 100% of the profits from the book are going to three amazing charities to help give an education, safety and welfare to young children who really need our help. So this book is all about giving people skills, but also giving all the profits from it that go to charity.
Now, another thing that I think a lot of us dread, and if you're visually impaired, well, personally, I dread this, is PowerPoint. It's something that I've never really warmed to, and it has its challenges, obviously, as well, if you can't see.
That's right. People are often told in business these days, can you send me your presentation before the event? And I always say to them, I can't send you my presentation. I am the presentation. The reason that people say that is because they're so used to these PowerPoint decks, which are just filled with words and lists, which are essentially the script for the person who's going to be presenting. And then bizarrely, they say, I'm not going to read everything that's up here. I'll read some of it so it looks like I'm not reading from it. Which isn't very useful for us. And we get given this notion of talking to people in lists, saying this, 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 and therefore this conclusion. We learn that in physics and chemistry classes at school, because that's the way we're taught to do experiments and write about them. But it's not useful for the brain engaging with information. So we often tell people to completely get rid of their PowerPoint slides, certainly the text on there. They can use images if they've got an audience that can see them, of course. But besides that, I always say to them, it's really the story. That's what matters. Tell me what the story is. And if you're absolutely compelled to put something up on a screen, then go for it. But really, your story and your tone of voice should keep me so engaged that I don't necessarily need to have anything else. And so people should put to one side the idea that a presentation is a screen filled with words, and remember that actually a presentation is them bringing to life words in a way that a document or a screen cannot.
And taking you back kind of full circle, I know that there's so much more to cover, but we're limited with time. The confidence attitude in the way that you portray yourself, again, that's such an important way of putting your audience at ease as well, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I often say to people that the best ideas are not the ones that necessarily succeed. So if you've got a great idea, that isn't enough to ensure its success. What you need to do is ensure that you're thinking about who is your audience. Is it one person, two people, or hundreds? What do they need from you? How do you completely put them at ease and thoroughly engage them? Because bringing that idea to life in a way that engages people is what ensures the idea is successful. So, for example, if you look at the late, great Steve Jobs, before he launched the iPod, loads of companies had MP3 players, but nobody cared about them. We weren't that interested because they were just talking about MP3s and gigabytes, and nobody really knew what that meant. But he then came on stage to launch his product, and he did so in a passionate way, telling a story about how challenging our lives are with these pesky CDs that were such an irritation that nobody had ever thought about them that way. And then he said, wouldn't it be extraordinary if we had 1,000 songs just sitting in our pocket on an iPod? Let me tell you how it works. And he changed the way the world listened to music, not because he was the first or he had the best sound quality or the cheapest product, none of those things. He did it because he understood how to bring that idea to life in a way that compelled people to listen. As a final thought on Steve Jobs, it's also worthwhile noting that he wasn't a confident speaker throughout his career. Early in his career, he was quite shy, quite a poor speaker. He'd stand behind a computer or behind a lectern and be looking at the floor with no variation in his voice. And it was only later in his career that he really came back to that full potential of a storyteller that engages us with ideas.
Fascinating subject. Your book's called You Were Born to Speak. Where can we get a hold of it?
So if you go to Amazon, look up You Were Born to Speak by Richard Newman, and you'll find on Amazon there's a Kindle version there if you want to download that, or, of course, the hardback copy. You can also go to borntospeak.com to get more information. And we'll have an audiobook version coming out in January, but for now, the Kindle version for those who are blind or visually impaired.
Richard Newman, I would love to spend some time in a pub and get some real tips off you. But for now, thank you so much for joining us.
You're very welcome. Thanks.